Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. Today, we're going to be talking about a couple of things, all roughly in the same general time period, concerning the rivalry between the U.S. and the USSR. The first occurred on September 1st, 1983, the downing of Korea Air 007, and then Chernobyl. Both of these are not what they seem. Both of these, you have to know the language to read the proper material. I don't think anything about this is in English of any significance. As with almost all of these events, the official story doesn't make any sense. Now, I'm no apologist for the Soviet system. I'm as anti-communist as you can get, but the Soviet Union was not in the wrong in either one of these cases. Korean Air and Chernobyl, as well as Afghanistan, were three of the big things that began the slow dismantling of the Soviet Union. Which is fine by me, except that these weren't the events that were actually reported. September 1st, Korean Airlines Flight 007, which of course is a very deeply symbolic number, was shot out of the sky by a Soviet Su-15 interceptor after it had passed over Kamchatka and the island of Munaron, which is part of Sakhalin. Archipelago. And Soviet territory twice. And it just so happens that this was a place where some of the Soviet Union's newest defense systems were being upgraded. Now, as always, you read the official story, let's say on Wikipedia or any of the English language sources, and then you go to the Russian sources. I mean, nationalist, could be Soviet, could be anything. You get a totally different story. As it turns out, in the Korea case, the Japanese press also told a totally different story from the U.S. Elmendorf is the air base in Alaska that destroyed all the evidence of their tracking of this plane. The fact is that the Korean airliner was told to go over Soviet territory. As soon as, there's simply no way that an experienced pilot, these two Korean pilots were very, very experienced, both Republic of Korea Air Force. There's no way to go off course and not realize it. That simply doesn't happen. And certainly not 500 miles off course. And these pilots, by the way, had done this route many, many times. I should also note that on Korea Air 007 was the head of the John Birch Society at the time, which was Congressman Larry McDonald of Georgia. The Soviet pilot that was sent, they scrambled their air defenses, which is what happens when you have a plane off course, unlike in America at 9/11. And he was immediately scrambled, sent up. There were actually two of them, and then a MiG was sent up. There were a bunch of planes sent up, because there was more than one plane, as it turns out. That was not reported in the American press. Soviet pilot shot 289 rounds of warning. Now, the claim is that they weren't tracers, so the pilot didn't realize, which is utter nonsense. He wouldn't have fired that many rounds if it didn't matter. The CIA had warned Richard Nixon, who was considering going on that flight to Seoul, to avoid it. And the Air Force, of course, claims ignorance as it always does, whether it be 9/11 or this case and many others. these guys have to sound stupid and incompetent in order for the story to go over well. Point being, whether it be 9/11 or Korea Air 007, they sound like children who don't know what they're doing, and they have to make fools of themselves in public so that the official story can continue to be told. The 9/11 case is ridiculous. How, you know, no one seemed to notice this thing. And of course, if it were a regular flight, it would have been scrambled immediately, just like the Soviets scrambled instantaneously. And of course, they're tracking every flight that comes out of Alaska coming close. And they had good reason to do this, as I'll mention here in a minute. Now, Yuri Andropov, head of the KGB, was briefly president of the Soviet Union, or head of the party, I should say, was absolutely convinced that the U.S. under Reagan was planning an attack. There is some reason for that, too. 1978, the exact same thing happened. Also a Korean airliner. American planes had regularly overshot that particular region for a strategic reason as far as the Russian Far Eastern military was concerned. And he had every reason to believe that Reagan was planning on something. There were way too many provocations. Whether it be in the 78 case or the 83 case, and always South Korean airliners, they ignored all warnings. It's bizarre how no one noticed, whether it be in Japan that was tracking it, South Korea that was tracking it, or the U.S., whether civilian or military, everyone's tracking this thing and no one seemed to notice it go 500 miles off course and no one said, by the way, you are way off course and in trouble because you're heading over Kamchatka. In both cases, they ignored all warnings because once the Soviet fighter was scrambled, they attempted to hail the plane using all the normal signals and nothing was said, which by itself proves that this is not what we were told it was. The other thing that this, the 007 plane did, which was very, very stupid, the Soviet SU interceptor pilot said that the pilot slowed under 400 miles an hour. This was right after it was told that it was over Soviet airspace, and that was considered an evasive move. Now, in the American press, the average American doesn't know what that means. Well, how could slowing down be an evasive move? Well, it's because the SU can't fly under 400 miles an hour. The pilot said that I can't go under that speed without stalling. In other words, it was a pretty smart evasive maneuver. And that was what provoked the pilot. And of course, he's under orders and he's hearing this. And I want to mention too that as this is going on, the U.S. has admitted none of this stuff. The Elmendorf base in Alaska was relaying all of this to the White House. So Reagan is getting a real-time feed as to what's going on in that part of the Pacific. 1982, U.S. provocations in the same area. Six U.S. jets had flown, a military craft had flown under, into Soviet airspace. And so Andropov is extremely concerned by this. Because of its proximity to Alaska, this part of the Soviet Union was being built up substantially. So the U.S. had every reason to get real pictures and visuals on what's going on in this pretty obscure part of the world. It seems that the Korean pilots overrode the autopilot. That was something that was admitted by everyone. But the fact that there was no attempt to correct course, that ground control took absolutely no action. And so to be in on the scam, you have to essentially admit that you're an idiot, that you have no idea what you're doing. 9/11 was the same way. The plane was tracked by the U.S., Japan, and the USSR, not to mention South Korea. And the U.S. was claiming that all of these computers, except the Soviet one, was misbehaving and somehow registered all the wrong positions. So South Korea, Japan, and the U.S. all made the same mistake at the same time. The plane, and this was not reported in the America, has never been reported in the American press, has never been reported in English before, went over several very strategic bases, many of them, in almost perfect line on the island of Monoron and the peninsula itself. The pilots, Colonel Zhang Benying of the Air Force and Commander Chung, Colonel Yang, who was, of course, you know, had not went into the civilian world, for 5 years, he was doing the Anchorage to Korea flight. This is a very common one. The 78 Korean plane that invaded Soviet airspace went from Paris to Anchorage to Seoul. So this is a very, very common route to refuel in Anchorage. And so this is a very, very common route for the Korean airliners to go. And same thing for the Japanese. So this is not a mysterious route for them. They went over 6 installations. 6 of them. 5 air, at least 5 air, and 1 naval base, every one of which was classified. All of which had been recently upgraded. Now, what the American press didn't mention, of course, the Japanese Air Force had very detailed records on this flight. And unlike the American Air Force, corrupt as they are, they did not destroy the records. Now, the hard evidence here that these pilots were told to do this and go to their deaths was that their widows came forward. Yi Zi, who was the widow of Commander Chung, second in command of the of 007, fully admitted that they were given very large sums, a large paycheck. These pilots were going to go to their deaths, more than likely, although it wasn't absolutely certain because the 1978 flight did not crash. But his wife said he was frightened that day. He didn't want to go. He didn't want to die. He didn't want to take this chance. But he knew his family would be taken care of. And of course, by then, he had feared what might happen to them if he didn't. Japanese Air Force intelligence admitted the whole thing was a setup. Yoshiro Tanaka, who wrote The Truth About 007, that of course it was an American spy plane. And therefore, the Soviets had the right to do what they did. Even more than that, it took the United States media 18 hours to report the crash. And the claim was that somehow the American Air Force, the American air traffic controllers, are so incompetent that they had no idea what this plane was, had no idea it was off course, and didn't know it was gone when it went down. Now, nowhere, as far as I know, nowhere in English has this ever been said before. And of course, every once in a while, it gets mentioned in passing and say, well, that's the Soviet propaganda and then we're supposed to move on. Well, they were very good at propaganda. If you guys remember Samantha Smith, who would be almost exactly my age, it was a very tragic situation. Samantha Smith, if you remember, was a little girl in 1983. It was 83, just before this happened. I think it was in June, and this occurred in September. Wrote a letter to Andropov, who had just taken over from Brezhnev, and she said, the letter went something very, very innocently, went on like, you know, why do you want to take over the world? Please, you know, let's have peace. Let's not nuke each other. Why would you want to do that? The very crude kind of things that you would think an anti-Soviet person would say at the time. Why do you want to take over the world? Stuff like that. Well, her parents were leftists. They wrote this letter for her. She was very, very cute. She had an acting career afterwards. And Andropov, who had the worst image on the planet, he had crushed Hungary. He had crushed Czechoslovakia. He was head of the KGB. He created the entire psychiatric gulag system. He was a vile individual. He was Jewish. A few people know. Saddam was not, but Andropov was. At least in part. His image desperately needed an upgrade. And this girl was almost a miracle for him. So he writes her back, saying how the Soviet Union wants peace, and I got a great idea. Why don't you come over and visit the Soviet Union? And see how one, and so they give her the Potemkin Village tour like you've never known. All these girls mob her at the airport. They're all her best friends. They all speak English miraculously. They're given, she's given a Potemkin Village tour for 2 weeks. She goes to the children's camp in the Crimea, Artek, I think it is. Is, you know, the child version of being wined and dined, and you know, is treated like a deity. She's taken to a school that was reserved only for the children of upper officials and told, this is what the education system looks like everywhere. So the poor thing didn't know any better. And goes on the air and says, the Soviet Union is a beautiful, wonderful place. There's such freedom and everything else. The American press went nuts. The ambassador for peace, they called her. They showered her with compliments. The only person who was suspicious was Johnny Carson, who had her on his show twice and asked her, do you know what propaganda means? You know, he was very nice about it. Because the poor, it wasn't her fault. Her parents put her in the line of fire here. Clearly being used by a soulless, you know, the Andropov is your classic bureaucratic tyrant. I mean, he had no personality. He didn't actually meet her when she got there. But there was a doctored picture at the UN of the two of them together. Well, she has a acting career because of this. She's on a bunch of shows, working on a movie, and her plane went down in 1985. The Soviet Union claimed that the JDL, Meyer Kahane, the Jewish Defense League, had brought the plane down, because at the time they were at war with the Soviet Union over the immigration to Israel issue. Same thing for Jessica Savage, the former, she was a PBS and I think an NBC. Same exact thing. Clearly it was a hit. The CIA, and I guess the JDL, had the plane, the little Cessna that she was, from Maine, from, you know, LA to Maine to go home, veered off course for no reason, just like the Korean airliner did. No clear reason. I veered off course. And for reasons unknown, an experienced pilot, ignoring all his instruments, hit the top of the trees, and that brought the little thing down, a little plane down, and there were no survivors. Actually, it wasn't that far from the airport. And I've written a YouTube video of her that the family put up, and I said, you know, you guys did this to her. I'm sure they're not very happy with me, but I wrote on there, I said, no one deserved to lose their kid, of course. But you leftist morons wrote this thing for her, allowed her to be used by the KGB as a propaganda tool, and then, you know, wonder why action's taken against her later. This is your fault, you idiots. So I'm pretty sure I'm not going to get a Christmas card from Samantha Smith's family. So the point is, thanks to the American press, working as always, hand in glove with the Soviet press, had rebuilt completely in Andropov's image to this grandfatherly figure like Stalin was during World War II. The Korean Air thing was in part a reaction to this. And because of the American intrusion in Soviet airspace many times before, in 82, then 78, many other times, Andropov was extremely upset and very paranoid about the American intentions. Reagan had sensed weakness. I mean, you know, we're all happy that the Soviet Union collapsed, although the immediate results were far worse than the Soviet Union itself. Still, the empire had to go. At the same time, these were stage-managed events. What really happened, and I don't think this has ever been uttered in English before, the truth is, at the end of September 1st, 83, they went over the international date line, so it became September 1st. Two 747s took off at the exact same time. And they kept very close together to confuse radar. This was the point. The Soviets reported they shot two planes down that day. Never mentioned in the American press. Korean Airliners 015 was unmanned. It had all kinds of equipment. It was sending all information back to the U.S. Also, it was stuffed with suitcases that had clothing in it so they can go later see that the Soviets shot down and killed all these people. And the two jets were very, very close. And so it looked to be one on the radar. One was manned, the other was unmanned. Now, the weird thing is that as far as the American reports were concerned, 007 was hit with a missile after all the cannon blasts apparently weren't noticed. But they reported a plane hit with a missile, and then the pilot in the Korean Airlines 007 is acting normally. He's talking like a normal guy. It couldn't have been. It was the other plane. Because of the Japanese records, the Air Force idiots had to finally admit two planes took off that day. The Japanese newspaper, Hokkaido Shimbun, on the 3rd of September, 83, said that the American version of events, because this was front page news at the time, of course, allegedly everyone on board was killed, of 007, a bunch of Americans, congressmen, etc. Japanese newspaper said that the American version of events is very different from their military as well as their ground control records. NATO then went on the air and said no warning shots were ever fired. And they even said, well, the Su-15 doesn't have a cannon on board, which of course was a lie. Well, the Japanese made it clear, both military, Air Force intelligence as well as civilian ground control, that there's a 9-minute difference in the two narratives. So I guess the U.S. Air Force said, well, I guess our clocks were wrong because we're absolutely incompetent. Whatever they said, having two planes explains the gap. I don't believe the U.S. government has ever admitted two planes. The Air Force may have hinted at it. Who knows what they've done? But there is KL-15, which they had to admit existed, but it was just a normal flight. No, in fact, it was an unmanned Boeing 747. The first exploded at 33,000 feet. The other, which was the Korean airliner, crashed. No records was ever found. Now, there's a Survivors Association of the Korean Flight 007 that claims that they're all still alive. Their Survivors Association says, and I don't know how true, I think it's probably ridiculous, it's an anti-Putin thing, but they say that the plane was harmed, but not destroyed, and it landed somewhere, and these people are being held captive. Now, why they would still be held captive after 1990, I don't know. What the purpose would be to have these people in prison after the fall of the Soviet Union doesn't make any sense. So their position is probably stupid. They're all dead. Both planes were shot down. Now, what they did find was, you know, these clothes and sneakers and everything else. A few were claimed by family at home. There's about 100 Americans, a whole bunch of South Koreans. The Japanese drew a map, or sent the Air Force a map, because apparently the Air Force didn't know what was going on, you know, and their claims to ignorance, showing the deviation of the plane and the flight path of the Soviet interceptors. And it clearly shows that the Su-15s were following more than one target. It's odd. No records was ever found. In fact, they're so incompetent that they claim that they don't know where it went down. And because of this, the Survivors Association says, oh no, our family's still alive somewhere. Now, I mentioned the 78 case, KL-902. It was a Paris to Anchorage to Seoul flight. Same thing. U.S. Air Force, we have no idea what happened. Our radars don't work. We're incompetent. You know, I mean, to have these stories work, they have to claim they don't know what they're doing. In this case, it wasn't, don't you, this, the 007 was at night. This was during the day. All hailing was ignored. Warnings were ignored. Ground control didn't say that they had deviated. The SU-15 went right up next to the plane, tipped its wings, which you do to, you know, say, follow me. They ignored it. They hit a warning shot with an R-60 missile. The second hit it, but did not bring the plane down. So it wasn't meant to be a kill shot. The plane limped to Finland. It landed safely. The Soviets rescued the survivors. They were treated very well. The Soviet Union sent the bill to the South Korean Airlines, but that bill was never paid. Again, it goes over major strategic areas. So here you have, which in 83, and I think the Samantha Smith case is clearly, at least partly, involved here. Clearly she was used by the Soviets and it was a terrible tragedy. That the Korean 007 airline shoot down was not what we know. We're told the Soviets, for no good reason, killed all these people. No, it was a spy plane. There were no navigation lights on. The pilot even says, he radios home, there's no lights on this thing. It can't be a passenger plane. We don't know which plane he was talking about. They shot them both down. And you ignore all these frequencies, and you don't attempt to change course. When all the ground control was following these planes, claims we don't know what's going on, they shot the damn thing down. And if you're in the Soviet Union, you do the same thing. Killing all aboard. The fact that the head of the John Birch Society was on the plane actually assists in the idea, you know, getting rid of someone like that is probably pretty significant. But that destroyed any kind of propaganda victory that Andropov had gained with the Samantha Smith case just a few months earlier. Clearly the U.S. was aching for a fight there. Big difference between then and now is that the government under Reagan and the ruling class, that is to say, the elites in all areas, not just government, had deviated. The elites were pro-Soviet. The elites had no problem with Marxism, although by the 70s, early 80s, the Soviet economy was in such shape that it was getting old. They weren't able to transfer it to consumer goods. The heavy industry revitalization never happened. The resources weren't there. And so a lot of Jewish interests had pulled out. And that explains the drive to immigrate to Israel and the U.S., the Jackson-Vanik Amendment, and the JDL's concern with Soviet policy. So because there was no further wealth to be squeezed out of the USSR by the early 80s, it then suddenly became fashionable to be anti-Soviet. However, the media and academics, part of the Vietnam era just a few years before, remained pro-Soviet. However, given the fact that the only information the media got in the 007 case came from the U.S. government and South Korea, who liked to, you know, to play up the tragedy element, they reported the wrong thing. It was a lie. So the U.S. government deliberately sent people to their deaths to score a propaganda victory in 1983. Now, let's fast forward 3 years. Chernobyl, reactor number 4, allegedly blows up, sends radiation all over the place. And this is supposed to prove that the Soviets had no idea what they were doing with nuclear power. Nuclear power is bad. And they repressed all kinds of information. They didn't want the truth to come out. These are ancient tyrants and we can't trust them. And it began to spur Ukrainian. Chernobyl was a huge spur to the Ukrainian independence movement. Now, the fall of the Soviet Union is a good thing. However, there is no way that the official story of Chernobyl can be true. I've read the UN report on it. It in no way connects with the US media reports on it. Very few people died from this. By the fall of, this happened in April. This is by the fall of 86, Soviet government had declared this an act of terror. And really, at least parts of the Soviet Union, the military considered itself at war, officially, with the US. The reactor is the RBMK 1000. It was a brand new reactor, the most advanced of its time. And people have to understand about nuclear power. The advanced reactors, they don't blow up. They can't. This isn't weapons-grade plutonium. The way, because we're, you know, Chernobyl is right on the border of Belarus, Ukraine, northern Ukraine, very western region. The Chernobyl reactors are built under tons of concrete. One of the reasons this was connected with the Twin Towers thing, and I think there is one essay in English on the 9/11 Truth page buried somewhere, is because there's similar absurdities here. Nothing can blow up the Chernobyl nuclear reactor. It was designed to withstand an artillery barrage. It's a nuclear power plant. It has to be. If there's ever a war, this would be an early target. It's designed to withstand an airplane. It's designed to withstand pretty much anything. Missile hits of all kinds. It can't blow up. Not to mention the fact that nuclear plants can't blow up anyway. That's never happened. The only kind of nuclear energy that can blow up are weapons-grade plutonium. Now, in this case, there's a few views from Russian academics that bring out the fact that this was actually an act of sabotage. The only thing that could have done this was a small nuclear device planted at the base of the reactor. Nothing else could have blown it up. The thing was completely destroyed. No conventional TNT could have done this. Nuclear fuel is extreme, power is very, very safe. It's very safe. By 1986, the RBMK and similar Western versions, they were foolproof. It's not an accident. You know, The Simpsons came out in 1987 with Homer Simpson working a nuclear plant under Mr. Burns. It's not an accident this is 1 year after Chernobyl. It destroyed the nuclear industry in France and Germany. There's so much wrong with the Chernobyl story. They were pouring nuclear submarine fuel into the mix. Plutonium-239. The ratio of 239 to 40 was five times the normal amount. Someone was to that extent, it was sabotaged. The official story is that for some reason, there was an experiment, a safety experiment. Now, safety experiments aren't done on functioning nuclear plants, especially since this nuclear plant was meant to power the Duga radar station a few miles away. So it had military significance. It was a military target. The official story is that there was an experiment being done at the time with all the major safety people sent home that caused, for some reason, a drop in power, then a surge in power when it came back on, that the safety features, the graphite rods that go in and stop the fission, didn't work. Really, the official explanation is actually very confused. They assume that people don't know anything about nuclear power, and so they can pretty much say anything. So it's a Johnson's Law concept. I'm no expert in the chemistry, although chemists have lots of political opinions, so I guess I can talk about this. Konstantin Chetrov, who studied this for, he's a nuclear scientist, studied this for 20 years now. agrees with this point of view. He says that there's no steam explosion. And even if there was, it could never have destroyed something this powerful. The reactor was actually intact. Civil defense in Ukraine was never alerted. There's actually no official cause for this, and at least on the Soviet side. All safety experts were kept away from the plant that day. There's no question about that anymore. The funny thing is, 1981, there was a battery of tests done elsewhere on exactly this situation. A fall in power for whatever reason, then a surge in power afterwards. In Leningrad, they had a similar issue in the late 70s, and this RBMK 1000 was designed specifically to avoid this. So the official story can't be true. Even if it were, it wouldn't cause an explosion. One thing that could cause a nuclear reactor to explode is a nuclear bomb. They can't explode. That's not what kind of nuclear energy this is. They simply don't explode. The only way that it couldn't, Chechrov has stated, the only way it could explode is if you made it explode. It was and always has been an act of terror. Now, while civil defense in Ukraine was never alerted, the military command in Belarus saw it immediately as an attack from the West on the USSR. Some of these guys had some knowledge of how a nuclear power plant works and said they don't explode on their own. I don't care what you do to it. I don't care if you try to make it explode somehow. It can't. That's not how nuclear power operates. It doesn't work that way. People think that a nuclear power station is like a nuclear bomb. No, those are two very different kinds of nuclear energy. And of course, the concept, so, you know, in the Korean Airlines, 3 years earlier, they're barbaric, you know, shooting down passenger plane for no reason. Here, they're backwards and stupid. I remember, I was a freshman in high school when this happened. I remember reading. I remember my teachers saying, in elite school, saying, the Soviets are so ignorant that this is an ancient 40-year-old reactor that shouldn't have been running. But they're so incompetent. No, it was a brand new reactor. The American press, and you know, the Russians, especially the Ukrainians, didn't help matters. The only damage that was ever done, when this nuclear, it had to have been a small nuclear device, the only thing that could destroy a structure designed for any kind of external attack. One of the things that happened immediately afterward, General Pilkov, who was a local military commander, who it's true did chemical warfare, but he was not skilled in nuclear matters. The story from Ukraine said that this guy was the first of the scene. It was a Sunday, no one was around. It was Purim, by the way. He said, you know what? You guys are young guys. I'm an old man. Let me go into the records. I'll sacrifice myself. And what I'll do is I'll bring a reader in with me and I'll show you exactly where the hotspots are. That's the story. Well, the guy never got sick. No radiation was ever released from Chernobyl. Either he's still alive or he died of old age. He was pretty old to begin with. He wrote this map, which was bogus. He didn't know what he was doing. And he didn't know how to read levels. And this map ended up being the official story and was eventually fell into the hands of the American press. The French Nuclear Commission was very upset by all this, saying that there was no alteration in the radiation levels of Europe. No alteration in radiation levels even there at the time. It had no effect whatsoever. There were workers there, right in without protection, working from April to September, who are still alive today. The UNSCEAR, or the United Nations Atomic Energy Commission, the effects of atomic energy, they wrote their report, which is available online. They confirm all of this. Finland reported no change in radiation levels. There was no loss of coolant in the thing. There was no meltdown. There was no radiation. Zero people died of radiation sickness. Zero. Now, the people who died are the firemen who were called to the scene, who didn't know what happened. See, the graphite rods that normally stop the chain reaction, it's a fail-safe measure, which apparently didn't work. When this thing was blown up, the graphite rods were thrown onto other buildings, and they were on fire. They were radioactive. The firemen didn't understand this. They're putting out these, they're blocks, you know. They put out those fires not realizing what they were doing, and they did die. But you had to be right on top of them to get the kind of radiation. The French data, because the French, you know, there were big nuclear power people, almost the entire grid there was nuclear. It destroyed the industry there, and they panicked. And they said, I'm sorry, both private sector and public sector nuclear commission said no radiation has been released here except for these rods. There's no way this could have blown up on its own. But I tell you one thing that did happen, and the French, Russians, and the Ukrainians did admit to this, that while there was no medically verifiable cases of radiation sickness, except for those guys where they're putting out the fire, it turned out to, I think, 29 total, they were told that the entire country's poisoned. We were told this in this country, that all of this is a dead area. I still, to this day, I'm seeing stories. You can go to various news reports, you know, what it looks like inside Chernobyl today, all these years later, and there's cats with two heads and everything else. These are all fake stories. The exclusion zone is exactly 1 square kilometer. They're planting crops right outside of it with no problem. Obviously, the place isn't poisoned. No land was ever damaged. Now, because the American press is what it is, and while they supported the USSR in a lot of different ways, again, by 86, this was changing, still, they hated nuclear power. The Ukrainian government, once it declared independence, partially on these grounds, said that hundreds of thousands were killed. The American press said hundreds of thousands were killed. The Polish press in 2000, as late as 2000, said 4,000 were killed, 3.5 million diseased, all kinds of cancers, all kinds of two-headed babies and everything else came from all of it. It's false. So what you had was a massive explosion of psychosomatic illness. The UN made actually a big deal about this, did not get any press in the US. Massive psychosomatic illnesses and a huge spike in abortions. Because Ukrainian women were told that they're all poisoned, so you better kill this baby. This is why the Hasidic Shabbat organization calls it the Chernobyl miracle. Remember, the area of Chernobyl was one of the places where Bogdan Khmelnytsky wiped out the Jewish elite in 1648. When this part of the world came under the Russian Empire in the 18th century, it was almost exclusively Hasidic city. The fact that this was done on Purim gets me worried. They still cheer for the Chernobyl miracle to this day. They also helped spread the rumors that millions and millions were either killed or poisoned. And the idea of all these Christian women, you know, killing their babies was such a great, you know, just filled them with great glee. But people were dying of non-existent illnesses. Psychosomatic illnesses spiked all over the place. And it was usually things that they thought were connected with radioactivity, but actually were not. The biggest problem of radiation sickness is heart disease. So they're reading this stuff in the papers, and they start getting scared. It was mass panic. In September of 86, the New York Post spoke of secret mass graves in that part of Ukraine. In 1995, October 13th, Reuters said 800,000 children have all kinds of weird growths and are freakish now because of this. Yet the soil remained fertile. Why does the Ukrainian government still claim that millions were killed or at least injured? Well, First of all, it was a big justification for their later independence, and importantly, they were getting billions of dollars from Western country to quote-unquote rebuild. The Ukrainian government in 1995 said 125,000 were killed. The French, the Germans, the UN said absolutely not. That is an outrageous lie. There's no evidence for this. No medical records were ever given. There's lots of reasons for the demographic decline having nothing to do with nuclear power, because that happened throughout the Soviet Union. The government in Kiev created a benefits fund for survivors, and as people are wont to do, they were claiming benefits no matter where they lived in Ukraine. Millions of people claimed benefits, so it was a cash cow for a lot of people, financed from abroad. All kinds of concerts and everything else were held. There were billions of dollars sent to Ukraine to rebuild after this. So the government had good reason to maintain the fiction that people were dying of radiation poison and that lots of people were killed. But even now, the official story still says, I think, 40 people died total. That those who were liquidating the plant are still alive today. They were working there for months and months and months. They weren't in the protection suits you would need to work at a nuclear real radiation, almost make movement impossible, especially back then. They weren't protected. They were told there was no problem, because there never was a problem. No radiation was ever leaked. That's not how nuclear power works. It simply wasn't done. According to the UN, according to the Germans and the French and many others in Western Europe, either 39 or 41 died of radiation exposure from the graphite rods, and there is no evidence of any radiation sickness at all from anyone, even living next to the place. Most of the people there have been resettled anyway after a very short time. But I distinctly remember being told that most of Ukraine is going to be at least that part of Ukraine and Belarus, people will never be able to live there for 100,000 years. I remember that distinctly. At the time, this is, 86, I very distinctively remember this. Now, it's kind of odd. I mean, Russians, Soviets, most Western Europeans who know do believe this was a form of demolition. April 16th, 1986, just before this happened, Moscow talks and shows, or it's a TV, like their version of the TV guide. The magazine came out. And in a column about a TV show, there's a picture of a nuclear reactor with an explosion symbol on. And this was the specific issue that came out there near Pripyat in Ukraine. And a lot of people, I don't know if this is true, but a lot of people said this was a signal that it's to go down. It didn't make any sense. There was no explanation ever given for this thing. I've seen it myself. I think it's online. There's a search for it in Ukrainian, though, or in Russian. If you search for it in Ukrainian, you get nothing but the, Ukrainian concept. Search for it in Russian, you get a totally different story. One way or another, the official story is nonsense. Now, in researching this, I've been researching this for some time, I had to learn a thing or two about nuclear power and realize that it's just, this stuff can't happen. By 1986, advanced reactors simply could not do this. All of the French electricity at the time came from nuclear power plants without a single problem. Homer Simpson isn't at the controls here. That's not how nuclear power works. You couldn't destroy it if you wanted to. There's so many levels of safety. You couldn't do it. You have to bomb the thing. You have to do it from the inside. Now, I don't know if these other, Swedish or French reactors are military grade in the sense that they're armored the way that Chernobyl was, but the fact that it was so heavily armored and yet totally destroyed, that it had to have been a bomb and it had to have been some kind of a nuclear device, however tiny. But then there's a question of the Duga radar. Right next to it, there's another city called Chernobyl II. This was a, really, the so-called Russian woodpecker. one of the reasons for the Chernobyl upgrade was to fuel this radar station. It was one of the biggest in the world. The U.S. got very, very upset about it. They claimed that it violated all the treaties. Probably the most advanced radar station in the world. Took a huge amount of power. That made Chernobyl 1 a military target. A guy by the name of Yevgeny Borkovsky, works at the Academy of Sciences in Ukraine, said 22 minutes before the explosion, there was an earthquake registered underneath the reactor. Now, an earthquake isn't sufficient to destroy the reactor. That's what happened in Fukushima, and it didn't do it. It was the tsunami that caused the problem, not the earthquake. But there hasn't been an earthquake in that part of the world in Ukraine for many centuries. So there's a claim, of course. I mean, there are tectonic weapons. The Soviets worked on them. The Americans worked on them. This was not reported anywhere else, except in the Ukrainian Academy of Sciences. No one denies it because that was picked up elsewhere. And it's almost a half hour before the explosion. It's conceivable, if there was a tectonic weapon used, that it failed. And then whatever device was used to blow it up was a failsafe afterwards. There's no question that the Shabbat organization, that the Hasidic Jews in Ukraine cheered and jeered that Purim night, calling the Chernobyl disaster a miracle. A few days later, 9 CIA agents were arrested in Russia. In Moscow, actually. Several agents of the United States were accused. And there had been, and there's no question about this, American military action on the Black Sea. U.S. warships came into the Black Sea near the Crimea, the USS Yorktown and the Karen. The KGB had reported on the 16th that the U.S. military was active in the Black Sea and the Crimea. And in fact, the Muslim Brotherhood, financed by the U.S., was functioning in the southern part of the country on Russian soil. The fact is that the Russian military believed itself to be at war with the United States that week before the explosion. So what does this tell us? What is the point of all of this? We have three phenomena. You have poor Samantha Smith, whose idiot parents wrote this letter to Andropov. He sees it as a propaganda coup, and he plays it to the hilt. And he plays it very, very well. The Western press went nuts. Works being, to this day, go on YouTube, look at her videos of her newscast, all the stupid comments. Ambassador for Peace, who's on the cover of Time magazine. It was horrible. All of a sudden, Andropov is no longer this butcher. He was a great guy, another Uncle Joe. 2 years later, she's killed. And a plane crash has not been explained. Remember, planes that small don't have a black box. And of course, all records are gone. Just like in the Korean case. Crazy coincidences happen in these cases. So now, and he is a butcher, no doubt about it. His image is now at Stalin levels. He's a great guy. Remember, the Reagan administration, there was a huge disconnect between the state and the ruling class. The ruling class hated his anti-communism. They were so heavily invested in the USSR. You know, universities were small versions of the USSR. I mean, there was no question that communism was fashionable in the U.S. Yet Reagan was dedicated to this. I mean, major corporations were trading with the USSR in sensitive areas. I've written about this. I have a book coming out on this. Anthony Sutton wrote on this. I broadcast on this. Reagan said, I have attempted to stop the flow of sensitive information and military technology going to the Soviet Union, but I cannot because we live in a capitalist country. He attempted to do it. He stemmed the tide to some extent. But the entire Soviet industry, of course, was created by the U.S., and the computer industry was created by the U.S. Since American computer firms were trading with the Russians, with the Soviets at the time. The most advanced systems, which of course could be used in military, which was their purpose. Not to mention, Soviet citizens were coming over here, the Soviet-American Friendship Committee, BS, and they were being educated in American universities, and then said, what kind of Cold War is this? You know, of course there was no Cold War as far as the ruling class was concerned. But Ronald Reagan was a different story. The press hated him. And where he got into trouble was his anti-communism. Marxism was never a problem in the U.S., never a problem even for the U.S. government for the most part, until Reagan. U.S. capitalism traded briskly with the Soviet Union. They fed the Soviet Union. They defended the Soviet Union. There was no question about it. Of course, Korea and Vietnam can be explained by the simple fact that the empire just got too big. It didn't matter. The ideology wasn't the problem. It was simply the resources that this country was able to command. The Soviet Union never got a tenth of the hatred that Putin gets. That has to be explained. The constant threats of war never occurred under Reagan or any president during the so-called Cold War. Only when a nationalist takes over. However, in the late 70s and during the Reagan, for the most part during the Reagan administration, there were clear provocations against a very paranoid, not paranoid, I don't mean to give a diagnosis there. I mean, he was right to be upset because the U.S. had done everything it could to convince Andropov that a war was coming. And that explains, of course, the Korean airline thing. To this day, I'm the first to report that there were at least two planes involved in this. That it was a spy mission. Nothing about the official story makes any sense. The Air Force is not that incompetent. And the Japanese contradict it all anyway. I've read Russian translations of the Japanese newspapers at the time that show the Japanese are almost making fun of the Americans, saying, no, this is not what happened. It was a deliberate diversion, and it just so happened to go over six bases, every one of which, or at least installations, every one of which was secret and classified. This is why it was shot down. Now, I'm no defender of the Soviet system, by any means. Andropov was a butcher, so was Chernenko. Unfortunately, what happened in the 1990s was far worse. The Soviet economy, or the economy, simply disintegrated. And millions of Russians died. The lifespan of the Russian male went down to 58 in 1997. You'd rather live under Stalin than live in the 90s in Russia. There was no economy. There was no currency. There was no state. There was no military. It was a set of islands of private power backed by the U.S. and Jewish oligarchs. Putin, of course, changed everything. He rebuilt the state, and for that he's condemned. Now, third thing, Chernobyl. The official story makes no sense scientifically. It makes no sense, but it simply makes no sense at any level. There was a bomb planted underneath it, after a bizarre earthquake that never occurred before or since, that blew this fortified nuclear plant completely to heaven. The nuclear device, a very small one, I don't know, whatever it was, had to be strong enough to destroy a structure of 2,400 tons of reinforced concrete that's meant to be able to withstand any attack. Missiles, planes, it's meant artillery shells, anything. It's meant to withstand everything. Because it is essentially a military target. It's connected with the Duga radar station right next door. What's going on here? Well, this is before the internet. This is Johnson's Law. This shows you that nothing that people believe happened actually happened. It's all lies. None of it is true. And in fact, the more you read about it, the more you realize that it's absurd. It can't be true. It's not how these things work. Now, of course, we're happy that the Soviet Union fell. We're happy that these things had the effect that it did. But even Solzhenitsyn had mixed feelings about the fall of the Soviet Union because of what happened to the Russian-Ukrainian populations. They collapsed. Morality collapsed. Everything collapsed. Only Putin was able to resuscitate it. So, something else that Solzhenitsyn did say. These were all lies. The official story made no sense. And it's connected with 9/11 in the sense that, you know, 9/11, you know, you have a structure of that building. People talk about steel beams, you know, and I laugh at them. I said, you know, these aren't steel beams. These are custom-made alloys, 1,000 times more powerful than steel. You can't build a building that high and with regulations like you have in Manhattan and just have plain old steel beams. No. These are extremely expensive steel alloys that are indestructible. The steel structure, the frame of the building, is far stronger than tank armor. So we don't have to talk about melting points and stupid crap like that. This isn't steel beams. The base is steel. The structure is steel, but it's certainly far more powerful than that. It's been treated over and over again. These are very, very expensive alloys, custom-made just for these kind of buildings. But just like Chernobyl, the Twin Towers, because they're so high, are designed to withstand a hit of a plane. Because aluminum can't penetrate tank armor. And of course, this is far stronger than tank armor. City planners were concerned with air travel because it's so high. So many flights are going over. When you see what happened with the Sully's aircraft, Sully Sullenberger's aircraft, how easy it could be to send a plane, even inadvertently, into these places. Regulations for a building of that height call for a steel of immense significance. It's a very expensive custom-made alloy. It can't be destroyed. I mean, it's just, you know, it can be destroyed, but you really have to work at it. You have to know what you're doing, and it takes a lot of work. These are far, far more powerful than steel. They would never trust just plain old steel for a building like that. That doesn't make sense. Chernobyl 2, it could never have happened. This isn't weapons-grade plutonium. Although some of it was mixed in, this is true. All that did was make the thing more volatile. But that's not what caused the explosion. It does prove, though, that someone was messing with it. It does prove that it was manipulated, that it certainly was an act of terror. Ukrainian independence turned out to be an utter disaster, partially because it's based on lies like this. Nothing is ever as it seems. These stories don't make sense. From Samantha Smith to the airliners, to Chernobyl, to the Twin Towers. Nothing is ever as it seems. But you could give all the evidence you want. People will not accept it. Why? Because it's easy to be ignorant. Because to accept this would be to completely alter your life. You couldn't trust anyone again. You'd have to politically, you become a pariah, in other words. And no one wants to be a pariah. It's easy to be stupid. It's easy to just go along. Let me explain something to you. Newspapers, TV news, mass production books, you know, Random House, that kind of thing. These are not meant to educate anybody. That is not their purpose. They don't claim to be educational. It's to entertain. That goes for the History Channel, CNN, all these other things. So relying on this for information means you know zero. They are not meant to inform. That is not their job. That is not their purpose. They don't even claim that. They are there solely for ratings, for entertainment, to keep a listener's interest. and they'll do what they have to do. This is why I say that these people who rely on this kind of thing are totally ignorant, have no right to have any opinion on this stuff. They have no idea what they're talking about because they believe that establishment sources, which are based on the free market, in other words, manipulating people, are about education. And they're not. They don't actually know anything. Power is not the government telling you to do something. Power is far more sophisticated than that. Power has many, many layers. Everything that occurs in history is a conspiracy. Of course it is. Powerful people don't get to be powerful by telling you what they're doing ahead of time. That's not how it works. The fact that you don't get a postcard from the elite saying this is what we're going to do tomorrow may hurt your feelings, but that's not how powerful people operate. That's not how power ever works, ever. But the ignorant create these kind of defense mechanisms to deflect, to reinterpret. They'll repeat what you say in a way that they can understand, that of course is designed to make it sound ridiculous. That's because they don't get it. Everything that the average educated American or Englishman believes today is a fantasy. They live in a fantasy bubble. And I think we're seeing that come to fruition today. Thank you everyone for listening. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Orthodox Nationalists with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson at RadioArian.com.